Why are there so many songs about snowmen?
Dirty Whoers.
Cross-Atlantic nitpicking about Doctor Who.
From four grown adults who should probably know better.
From four grown adults who should probably be working.
We're not afraid to say it like it is.
All the word bollocks.
www.dirtywhoers.com.
Follow us on Twitter at Dirty Whoers.
If you like that kind of thing. Also on Facebook. Deal with it.
Geronimo!
Fantastic.
LNC.
Cock.
With your hosts.
Number one assistant, Terry Lightfoot.
Oolong Sputters Sputnik.
Resident Pixie, Fuchsia Begonia.
Lord President, Sen.
Crazy voice you got there.
Thank you very much. Yeah, unfortunately, I've got a bit of a cold going on, so you're going to have to bear with me, ladies and gentlemen. But it's okay, because we'll be able to get Sen on the topic of the new console room, and I'll be able to shut up for 20 minutes. We're going to do the Christmas episode, The Snowman. Okay, first appearance of Jenna Louise Coleman, first appearance of the new TARDIS console room.
First?
No, second. No.
Last time, she was a Dalek. This time, she's a bit more interesting, but we'll get into that. Certainly, second appearance of Clara Oswald in whatever form she's going to be. I apologize for putting myself in a position where I could be instantly corrected. Matt Smith?
Love it.
Yeah, I just love speaking at the moment. I'm here to fix the plumbing. Also starring Richard E. Grant, who is frankly marvellous in anything he does, and has interestingly been the Doctor once before, if you count the animated Flash version. And Sir Ian McKellen as well as the Great Intelligence. I may just actually monologue for a while with this voice and enjoy it while I have it. Also, you got Neve McIntosh back as Madame Vastra, and obviously written by the Moffat, and directed by Saul Metstein, who's done a few Doctor Who's. He did, well, will be doing 14, 12, 6, 3, and 2 in this season, so quite a good chunk, some of which as yet unnamed. Okay, so let's get down to the nitty gritty, shall we?
Oh my god. You could be a good villain right now.
There's parts of the fan base positively moist right now.
Oh, Jesus.
I was going to say, I don't know whether to be aroused or. There's the 60-day smoker's hack.
All right, let's get this fucking thing some ratings, shall we? Who would get to start?
10. Flat.
Okay.
Well, okay, 10, maybe for the last 6 minutes, you need to be narrating in the background.
I would say 20, plus a big tin of Quality Street, seeing as it is Christmas.
Yeah, I'd give it at least a 20, and I don't know, something. I'm so apathetic today, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's all right, you'll perk up, I'm sure. Caffeinate yourself, you'll be fine. I'm going to go 10, but cocktails at the Ritz.
Well, that's
fine.
I must say, I did actually enjoy it. I really felt as though this is leading up to something. I really feel as though this is leading up to the 50th anniversary. And I'll give the episode a 10, but I'll give the new title sequence a 50.
Oh, it was rather lovely.
Oh, it was great.
And I'm thinking, not only is that a homage to all the years of Doctor Who and to 50 years of history, thank you, Mr. Moffat, about fucking time, you recognise that, but also I'm feeling that the new console room is a homage, at least to the 80s.
Interesting note about the credit sequence. It's very like the DVD credits when the TARDIS flies towards you. I like the new theme tune as well.
Yeah. I didn't even notice there was a new theme tune.
It's very subtly changed. It's not a drastic change.
Oh, okay.
But it's better than the last version.
It's got a bit more chesty bass, rather like myself, actually.
Mm.
It has got a little bit more chesty bass, and I always like that. That's why I love the movie theme so much.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do you really?
Yeah, I love the movie.
Oh, yeah, I love it. It's my favorite. I
would have liked that one more if it had been a little quicker.
Of course, I do think that the best theme is our own.
Personally, I really like the 1963 version with the hissing in the background.
Okay.
It is classic.
And I like the Tom Baker one with the this at the end. Just
yes. Oh, that's really cool.
For a specialist podcast, this has got really specialist very quickly, hasn't it?
Oh, come on.
And we haven't even got to the console room yet.
We're just nerding.
Ulan mentioned homages, and there were a lot. I mean, the opening sequence, the whole kind of origin of the great intelligence. And
yeah.
I thought a lot of it kind of fell flat for me, and I really just wasn't that captivated by this, with the exception of Coleman's acting. She's a spitfire. She's a fun one. I think she's great. Her and Smith, because they can both just act. They held me, but the story didn't. I thought the story was just filler for the last 10 minutes, which was fucking awesome. The build-up, the whole thing now with her character kind of being apparently the focus of at least the next few episodes, and her origin being such a mystery. This mystery excites me a lot more than Riversong's did.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, yeah.
And Riversong was played by a fantastic actress, and it was a great premise, and for whatever reason, it just never grabbed me. But this already has. I love the premise of the mystery behind her character. This is great.
And this is the thing that worries me the most, though. This is the thing that fills me the most. Yeah. I love it. I think it's a great idea, but I seriously don't think that Moffat can pay off the check that he's written. Whatever he comes up with, it's unlikely to be as good as the setup.
The impossible astronaut until it spiraled out of control, too. I agree with Fuchsia.
Yeah. But there wasn't as much of a setup here.
Yeah, agreed.
Moffat doesn't do anything subtly, but this was sort of thrown in at the end of the story, and I like the way this is set up more. It doesn't have to be as huge a payoff. It's just a mystery. Who is this chick?
Yeah.
How did this happen?
If I may, son, I think we're already invested in this character as well, because she's already saved the Doctor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? We've already got a curiosity going on here. Yeah. But seeded way back at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
Who the hell is Clara Oswald? And we've never seen anything like this before, and because it's been seeded so far back, for me it's feeling very natural, and I care.
I think that Moffat was really clever this time, and I feel like he's really learning a lot as he's been doing the series from the very beginning.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's
trying stuff out.
Yeah.
He's been experimental. He's been taking lots of risks, and some of them have paid off, and some of them haven't, and he's learned.
Right.
He still hasn't learnt the major lesson of making sure his plot is internally consistent, though.
Very few Who writers have since the 60s, frankly.
Yeah,
it's kind of the dirty, dark secret of Doctor Who that the adult fans don't like to talk about very much, that the stories are rough. Even the good ones have inconsistencies in them. But I did enjoy this. I understand that the Christmas special has to have a little camp.
Yeah.
And I've come to terms with that. But the Centauran character was just over the top. And every time he appeared on screen, it's like it shaved a buck off my rating. It was just too much.
Yes. Absolutely. I couldn't abide it.
No.
Oh, my God. I really agree with you.
He was a little too goofy for me. But if you think about that, it's also kids watching it, not just adults. That was really probably appealing to children, and that's fine. It's not as bad as other things like, you know, the Doctor riding around a dinosaur.
But you forget that a straight-up badass Centauran was in the Sarah Jane Adventures, a kid's show, and played very well and written very well. So now we have a more family-oriented show with this stupid-ass comic relief Centauran.
Yeah.
That doesn't work for me.
If you want comic relief from a Centauran, that's what probic vent jokes are there for.
Yes, I agree. They actually play really great straight men. You want to see people laugh at a Centauran, just watch the two Doctors. They were played dead straight, and Baker and Trout just made asses out of them, and it's fucking hilarious. That's how it's done.
Centaurans are my favorite monster, and I was a bit bugged by reducing him to this goofy dude. Like, he wasn't scary at all.
He's like a spudgy-like in Dallas shoulder pads. He's just played so much for gags that it defiles the very nature of Centaurans.
Oh.
I was really bothered by the Doctor making all the potato jokes, too.
Actually, if you leave out that gang of three, the Silurian and her not-so-butch wife and the potato head, I actually really love this episode, minus those three. Seriously, the story around Clara and the family and all of that and the way the Doctor was played, loved it. I mean, this would have been a 20 with a big tip for me if those three simply had never shown up. Mm-hmm. I just didn't like them.
One of the other things that got me initially... Oh, I think my throat's getting a bit better.
Oh, you must be drinking.
Only coffee, I'm afraid. It's got Jameson's in it, but you know.
You're only coffee if it's got Jameson's in it.
That is pretty much only coffee, though, isn't it? Anyway, the other thing was the Mary Poppins stuff, but I put that out of my mind pretty quickly. I thought, it's a bit trite and cheesy, and then I thought, well, it is Christmas.
And it wasn't too Mary Poppins, to be fair.
I loved the climbing to the clouds. Oh. And I loved the fact that the spiral staircase was very reminiscent of the spiral staircase from the Tennant era.
Is that what it's from?
It seems so. It seems so. Yeah. The one inside the TARDIS.
Yeah.
I just couldn't believe how much he's setting up the 50th anniversary, though. The new console room, we've not really spoken about it, but to me, it feels like a secondary console room. Because you step down into it, it's a lot smaller, it's a lot more compact. And we also have an episode coming, which is called something like Journey to the Center of the TARDIS.
Oh my god, I'm so geeking out on that.
Yeah, bucket of cold water for Sam.
That's so exciting. Oh my god.
Even shrinkage wouldn't stop that, I'm sorry.
The TARDIS is looking much more like a machine to start off. And I know there's the whole merry and things that a lot of people don't like. I disagree. I think traditional.
It looks like he's raided a fairground. Oh, you've got the merry-go-round in the middle. You've got the bullseye targets around the wall. The only thing that's missing is the goldfish in plastic bags.
I can't remember the last time you said anything positive.
I have positive things to say later.
I haven't been truly excited about a console room redesign since Leela's era. And this is one of my favorites, if not my favorite. I absolutely adore it. I think it is, and you know that I've either participated in or oversaw the creation of almost 50 original console rooms in Second Life. This is simply the best amalgamation of 21st century sci-fi on TV and the classic series console room I have ever seen.
Yeah.
Now, when you say original console rooms in SL, can you explain what you mean by original?
Designs that may be inspired from the television series, but were never actually seen on screen or paper. Things that people did that they went, if I was the doctor, this would be my TARDIS. You know,
okay.
Stuff like that. Yeah, for those two people out there who aren't involved in SL that listen to our podcast. What the fuck's wrong with you?
Hello.
And unfortunately, there are not yet enough details to recreate this, which also means I don't know exactly what everything looks like. But I have to say that I'm having a hard time saying there's things I don't like about it. And you know what, Fuchsia? You are exactly right. Welcome to the TARDIS. Had they had enough money to put that many electronic blinky pieces in the TARDIS in 1963, it would have looked like that. Yeah. Yeah, they would have.
Yeah, I mean, I can see where it's come from. And it is a nod to the old console rooms. But compared to the last one, which was just gorgeous, I loved the old one to bits.
I'm sorry. The most advanced alien race in the history of the universe, the most technologically advanced beings ever created, do not use a fucking bicycle pump and a sink plunger as controls in their machines.
But that was there from Eccleston's.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
yeah, and you know how I felt about that.
Well, yeah, I know you hated the coral.
Hold on, but still, Sen, I always imagined that really those controls aren't physically that way. They just look that way because it's the doctor's sense of whimsy. Do you know what I mean?
But the doctor has always been whimsical. The most whimsical doctors, Troughton and Tom Baker, did not have something that looked like that.
They flew by the book.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Maybe they didn't know how to control the desktop theme thing yet. So there.
Well, I've got to agree with Sen. I liked the kind of steampunk thing and then realized how much of a bandwagon they were jumping on by having the steampunk thing. I've stood on that set and looked at that and it's a bag of poo. It really is. Yeah. There's a lot on that console that I agree shouldn't be there. And the bicycle pumps. And I did actually like hitting it with the hammer, but that's like a separate entity. Having a rubber hammer there seems very Tom Baker. Yeah. That's kind of quite nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I like my console rooms traditional. For me, growing up with Doctor Who, it should be white. It should have flashing lights and it should have a proper fucking timer and not a bong.
Yeah. Or a butt plug.
Well, I'm not fixated. I guess I'm just not fixated on that. I just imagine the TARDIS as being able to supply more imaginative console rooms if someone wants it.
I actually liked the Matt Smith more up until the Doctor's wife. And we got to meet the TARDIS.
Hmm.
And there's this element of, yes, she's in love with the doctor, but there's also an element of protection, of almost motherly love there. They have this weird familial relationship, and I don't see her indulging the doctor's whims quite that much, especially post-Time War. That's when we should have had Shiny, New, and Pretty to keep him back on the straight and narrow. Instead of letting him go off.
See, I always felt that that was a damaged console room.
I did too, up until we saw the Smith. And we were led to believe that it was not damaged, that that's just what it grew that time.
I mean, he let the TARDIS totally rebuild itself, remember? It wasn't working properly for a while, and he was just waiting before he came back to Amelia, and he just needed to take it on a test run or some bullshit. It sounds to me like it just was on its last legs through Eccleston and Tennant, and then it just finally just poof.
If we want to get super geeky about it, because you know I had to go there.
We're not being super geeky about
oh,
it already?
Oh, go on then.
We know.
Not yet.
You mean the more?
It lost its power source. When Gallifrey was destroyed, it lost the Eye of Harmony. Right. And
though technically that was stolen by the Daleks, which is canon, but anyway.
Yeah, I guess the way I pictured in my head and the way I justify what we've now seen on screen is that we have the Doctor doing a better job of finding proper power sources and the TARDIS doing a better job of digesting what he's found for it. Mm-hmm. And we now finally have, for the first time in the new series, a healthy TARDIS.
Yeah.
Well-powered, that was able to rebuild itself back to specs, or at least as close as it's ever been capable of. So
yeah,
we actually have...
Also managed to find a whole store of Star Trek and Battlestar Galactica DVD somewhere.
Yeah, but you've got to look at other things as well, Fuchsia. Look at the monitors. That's very much in the TV movie. You know, the large round elements that are set within the very much new series rims, almost framed areas, are very Troughton. There's even a bit of the old movies in there as well, I feel. And a lot of the secondary console room and its layout. I don't know. I think it's very Doctor Who. I'm not overly keen on the blue roundels, but I'm sure they'll grow on me. If I had to pick on anything, that would be it, I suppose.
Well, I love the fact that it's now integrated the hexagons and the actual roundels again, so that now we have a little bit of a tie-in from the Tennant era, too. I think it's a brilliant design. I love it.
I suppose one of the things that bothers me most about it is the fact that it's just so obviously been done because it's smaller, cheaper, and easier to strike.
No, I disagree. They didn't have to do it at all. It was a permanent set, and still is a permanent set. It's still up, the old one, from what I hear. They didn't have to do it at all. They've done this for the 50th anniversary. And as I say, I think there's every potential. We're going to be seeing a lot more of the inside of the TARDIS, and this is just the beginning.
It'd be awesome if it was the secondary console room. If, like, in some other episode, he suddenly walks into the main, bigger one that he had before. Yeah. That'd be awesome.
Well, what the Doctor's wife established something that I think a lot of fans had been kind of retconning on their own over the years, and that's that the TARDIS doesn't really have set console rooms per se. They just pop up and disappear as needed, which also lends the possibility that each one might specialize in something, some sort of operations that the other ones are a little bit clunky at.
Well, normally the faces do, don't they? Because it's supposed to be flown by a number of people. So, but we've sort of always known that. Don't forget as well, Fuchsia, that it takes a hell of a lot to build these things now because they're building them for high def. So the detail, etc., once we actually get close to this, has to be so much more than it ever was. They don't make things like this, and the old one was made like that. There was nothing wrong with the old one, and this is why it surprised me so much that they were doing this one. Therefore, I think there's method in the madness.
And yet there was a shot in this one where it looked really cheap. It looked like painted wood. You know, they were trying to go for the metal finish, but you could see it was painted wood and plastic, which just looked a bit...
Exactly. How marvellously Doctor Who.
I didn't catch that, but I was a little sorry to see the old control room gone all of a sudden, although I loved the new one. Yeah, I still sort of, I wasn't quite ready for a changeover so quick.
Here's a fiver, out the door, here's your bag. Goodbye.
Shut the fuck up.
Hey, listen, should we try and pull this back onto the episode?
Yay.
All right. I think I liked it a lot more than Sen. I really enjoyed Jenna Louise Coleman's performance, especially the moment where he gives her that key and she has that little moment and she starts to like get teary-eyed and she's like, I don't even know why I'm crying here. That little moment between them was really great.
Because the audience was.
Yeah.
And she kind of represented every Doctor Who fan for a second then, didn't she?
Yeah, that got me so so bad. And she did a great job at it. That's what I really believe her, and I really connect to her, which I was trying so hard with Amy. I could just like never really get that connection going. And this girl is just like, she's just instantly likable. In that first episode we saw her, you know, it's like, boom, she's cool. And of course, her and Smith are great.
Oh, they really have a rapport, don't they? Right off the bat.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they do. Yeah, they
really
do.
She annoyed me in the first one. I thought she was too gabby and too proactive. And now, I don't
I agree with those things. And yet, her and Smith still had a better rapport then.
Yeah.
I think that she's just a better actress. And when you have two good actors together, they're going to instantly get a riff off of each other. And I think that Tennant and Catherine Tate had that, too.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
I agree.
Well, let's hope for a repeat of that, those performances.
Yeah. I think that the science of the story was a bit poo. But
shite, I think, is the actual term.
Oh, God.
When I think of Doctor Who in total, I thought, there's so much crap science in Doctor Who. I mean,
no.
It's only marginally called science fiction.
I love the premise of invading a planet that's 100 years away from man-made global warming with snowmen. Boy, that's devious there, isn't it?
Then why, if they
It doesn't take a great intelligence.
Ba-bum-bum. If the molecules turn into water, why does that somehow deactivate their power? I don't know. You know, wouldn't that be even more powerful? Because then it can get into everything. Whatever.
It doesn't make sense.
Guys, have we been watching the same program for 50 years? I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
Who gives a fuck if the science makes sense?
Exactly.
As long as the history makes sense.
Exactly. So I with a grain of salt. I was like, it's not as bad as magic potions. I'm going to go with it. Yeah, the Centauran joking was just a little heavy-handed. He just sort of did a disservice to Centaurans everywhere.
Yeah, it was carry on really, a probic vent, wasn't it? It
really, yeah.
What was really, really heavy-handed, though, was the repeatedly slapping you about the head with the Doctor Who joke.
I'm so fucking tired of that bullshit joke. Fuck. At this point, it's just like, whatever. Okay, you have to say that every fucking episode like 50 times? Fine. Go ahead. I didn't have such a big problem with Lizard Lady and her wife. They kind of celebrated themselves a little too much, but it was all right.
For Victorians, certainly, yes.
It was nice. He has his little time team or whatever.
But you know, Tony Robinson is then.
I did like the idea of the frozen lady in the pond. That was kind of creepy, and those little
that was
kids.
Cool.
That pond's like 2 foot deep, and they didn't discover a body for a month.
Yeah, I know.
If it had
I didn't actually see them
hard,
measure the depth of it. Hmm.
If it had been frozen hard, they might not have spotted it. It'd been all white and murky. Could have happened. But some of the Victorianism was a little off. Your boss doesn't tell you you're pretty. Anyway.
But that was the whole Mary Poppins-esque kind of Christmassy doodah there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It took me a while to swallow that, and then I kind of just did and got on with it. Oh, she's a barmaid. Oh, she's Mary Poppins. Oh, well, it's Mary Poppins, and that's very Doctor Who, so.
More on the lines of, well, it's Tom Ward and you would.
It was pretty amazing that
not
she
really
managed.
My type, but thanks for the image.
It was pretty amazing that she managed to jump the top of a carriage wearing that giant bustle.
You shouldn't actually presume people are gay just because they're Doctor Who fans, you know, Fuchsia.
One of the Doctor Who writers actually posted, like, we're not all gay.
Yes, I have quite a unique sexuality. I'm a heterosexual Doctor Who fan.
It was quite interesting that he felt the need to point that out to people.
I think it's worth pointing out that we are all four, I believe, unless we have a couple switch hitters I don't know about. We're all four straight Doctor Who fans, so come on.
I just had a licorice log. It's not a euphemism. Go on, Fuchsia. Get it out of your system.
I actually really enjoyed this one. I think this is one of the best Christmas episodes, along with The Flying Shark. There are hideous plot inconsistencies. I was shouting at the telly while it was on. I mean, as we've already mentioned, the beating you to death with the Doctor Who joke. Because we're all, you know, have the memory spans of goldfish and can't remember the fact that it's been done to death over the last episode. I loved Strax. I thought Strax was wonderful, but that could be his obsession with grenades. Pixies are rather fond of grenades as well. There was actually a role-playing group I was in where my character's bag of grenades was confiscated from her because she kept blowing them up as many times as she blew up the enemy.
So you like it because he's as annoying as you are in a role-play situation.
Yes! Pretty much! Yes! I would like to see more of those three, and it looks like we're going to, based on the trails at the end of the episode. The major problem I had with the episode was the, oh no, we must keep the ice lady off the snow, and then lead her onto the roof covered in snow.
Uh-huh.
And then drop her off the cloud to land on said snow, 18 inches behind the snowman and the bad guy, who are the most unobservant bad guys in the history of Doctor Who, which has a great history of bad guys with shit peripheral vision.
Yeah.
She's lying on the floor behind them for 3 or 4 minutes with bits of the thing that they're after.
Right.
And one of them goes to have a look. They're sort of just standing like, have a look, dead person.
The fact that she turned into snow to get out of the window, she didn't climb out of the window, she turned to snow first and then reformed. What?
Yeah, so that really irritated me because that was just so sloppy. It could have been very easily picked up, covered with a line of dialogue, wouldn't have been a problem. On the second watching, we kind of got more how the fact it was just the family and Richard E. Grant's character that were affecting the snow. It was interesting the way they actually played the Doctor as having like a subconscious memory of the Great Intelligence, feeling that he should know something about it, but not really remembering it. But then based on the ages, it's going to be about 400 or 500 years since he actually encountered it.
Very possibly, but there again, there might be something going on there with the 50th anniversary where he just doesn't remember and we're going to find out a little more.
Always remember everything from each regeneration to the next.
True, but it's also one of Matt Smith's favourite episodes, isn't it? So we'll see.
I'd be interested to see as well whether it's the key that's causing the problem with Oswin.
The key? What do you mean the key?
You know, the TARDIS key, whether it's something to do with the TARDIS that keeps bringing her back. Because it's like somebody's trying to give him a message something's trying to give him a message.
Oh, there's a whole bunch of dialogue in the episode that kept coming up. And the second time I watched it, I noticed it a lot more, was all the references about the universe not caring. The universe doesn't give second chances. The universe this, the universe that. Is this going to be the universe talking?
Well, remember, the universe was created by Amy Pond.
I just really hope that it doesn't turn out to be another messiah complex thing with the universe just telling the Doctor that he's needed, because at which point I might have to vomit profusely.
Yeah.
Me too. I love the sound of the mystery, but I'm worried about what the answer's going
to
be.
Okay, well listen guys, we need to round this up because we've been going on and we stuck a load of stuff in here about the TARDIS and this, that and the other. Yeah, we probably should. You got one?
Well, I liked the bit about Madame Vastra sent me to see if you needed any grenades. Did she really say that? I know she might have said help.
I'm wearing a dress, eyes forward, soldier. I like that because this companion isn't all for the Doctor like so many have been.
Except for kissing him all over the place, which really bugged the shit out of me.
But he had just introduced himself as her gentleman friend who'd been upstairs kissing her. So that's a bit of a come-on for a girl.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, I didn't really like the Sherlock Holmes thing, but at least we now know that we're never going to get a crossover, which is a good thing.
I love the Sherlock Holmes thing.
Did you?
Really cute. I did, it was very cute. It was very cute. Yeah, it made me think of Tom Baker. And then in the end, when he just makes that completely cheesy joke about it takes one to snow. I just, the look on his face was perfect.
I think it's a blown opportunity. I think more could have been done with that era and Conan Doyle and Sherlock Holmes than a throwaway gag that we got.
You never know, they might if they've got Vastra and Strax and people back, you never know. I'm surprised nobody's gone for the I never know why, I only know who line, which was lovely. That was a beautiful line.
Well, I haven't had a go because I just can't think of one. Nothing really stuck out for me. You know, the things that stuck out were the things like grenades, and we did get another bow tie as a call. Shut up, I'm making deductions, is quite nice. But on the whole, it wasn't, I don't think, very quotable for me. Nothing stuck in my head, but they're going to have only watched it the once.
Yeah, so. Same here.
When she said, it's cooler. And his performance was really good here in this story whenever he was delivering those funny lines and stuff, and he was looking in the mirror, admiring himself. Yes, they are.
Funny lines. Best. Oh, fuck. Compared to the other Christmas specials, this was like Die Hard compared to Sound of Music.
I know. Yeah. Wasn't the next Doctor a Christmas special?
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
I actually like that one a lot.
Really?
That one's all right.
I like bits of that one. Apart from the whole Tinker Doctor Messiah complex crap at the end.
Yeah, I know.
It has to be said, RTD did seem to have a messiah complex, and Moffat seems to have some sort of mother and or mother-in-law complex going on, which thankfully didn't make it into this one.
I do think Terry's got a point, though. I really think he is developing as a storyteller. I mean, I always think he's been pretty fucking good, don't get me wrong. And he's really thought about this season, what he can do with it, how he can make it different. And this makes the silence just excusable now. If this season's going to be like, if this is going to be a run-on from this, then I'll forgive him the silence. I'll just forget about it.
But will you forgive him the angels?
I've forgotten about it. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we have been the Dirty Hoes Doctor Who podcast. We rolled the Wheel of Who last time, so the next time we're going to be doing Power of Crawl. I may still have the sore voice by then, funnily enough.
Yeah. How does that happen?
Why that can be.
Who knows? The magic of podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us. Don't forget, we're on Facebook and Twitter and Google Plus. We're all over the internet like a pubic louse.
Oh, God.
Well, actually, he could have said worse.
I will. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Grenade.
You've been listening to
the Dirty Hooers Doctor Who podcast.
Follow us on iTunes or at dirtywhoers.com.
Find us on Twitter at Dirty Hooers.
Oh, yeah. We're also on Facebook.
See you next time.
So is there anything you'd like me to say in my porn star voice while I'm here? If you touch yourself, God will punish you.